Welcome to Windows into Eternity with Almeen. This hour you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almeen.
This is Almeen. I'm your host, and I am so happy to be with you again. It's our weekly hour of exploring the deep concepts of existence so that we may all grow. So, my brothers and sisters, we've been speaking quite a bit during our last show about the structure of the Holy City, the maps, how they represent the root races, man's role in all of this, and we also have looked at some of the 96 frequencies of transfiguration. I would like to look more at those frequencies today, but before we go there, let's take a look at something else. And that is something that we touched on last week. We said last week that in this holy city, there is an antechamber before you go into the massive throne room, and that antechamber has got in it a stained glass domed roof with a, looks like a star map that's on it. But it represents the amygdala, the map of that portion of the brain. Then in the chamber itself, we had 96 murals around it that represent 96 frequencies of transfiguration, amongst other things. Also represent the 96 root races. And we have there a dome in the ceiling of blue stained glass that represents high mind, with 12 smaller domes around it that represent what's called the ring of truth. There are glands and so on in the brain that all of these represent that Mother has always called the ring of truth. And so then we also have on the marble floor, and it, who knows what substance it's from, but it looks like highly polished white marble. There is an inlaid map there that represents the middle mind. And where then is the lower mind? It must be somewhere in the, because we even have the heart mind mapped out in the gardens, which actually is the map of space around the earth. We've discussed that last week. But where is the lower mind's map? Because those minds have to combine into one for true purity of mind to exist. The mind of the subconscious mind, the map of the subconscious mind, is found in the Zimbabwe libraries of the Roaring Waters, and it was discovered by one of the South African masters, Paul. And I'm hoping he's going to be listening to this. I mean, brilliantly done. So there was a prophecy that he would be the one discovering it. To the messenger of Mother, a god will bring a request to unlock the gates that he can spread his wings. Kuuhina vanash watu balalug nantawa saubi. That's how you say it. And from the Zimbabwe libraries of Roaring Waters, we had the South African master Nico say, I feel as though I want to spread my wings and fly, but I'm confined. See, and this is then saying to the messenger of mother, which I presume refers to myself, a god will bring a request to unlock the gates that he can spread his wings. Not knowing this prophecy, the master Niku said to me that he feels like he can't spread his wings, that he has to spread his wings and fly. And that is a direct quote fulfilling that prophecy. So, a translation from the libraries where the Master Paul got the map for the subconscious mind from, so that we can complete the maps of the three major minds of man, but somewhere in the Holy City, I'm sure it is. I just haven't seen it until we opened the Zimbabwe libraries and got it out of there. A translation from the libraries say, a feeling there will be as though confined, for life is a dream of the infinite's subconscious mind. The subconscious mind perpetuates the past, making it linger, making it last. Within the holy city, two maps do lie. A third we give that life free can fly. Maps of three minds, the subconscious, the middle, and the high. All three must mother join, merging the lower into the high. Great change shall come upon that day, for all life shall be lived a higher way. And it's so interesting, before we received this translation, the Master Paul said, after receiving the map, he says, I am feeling as if a drastic change has now come about. And so, you know, what this event is, when this map was uncovered in Zimbabwe libraries and these prophecies were being fulfilled, is that now the dream is no longer perpetuating the past. It is no longer a dream of the subconscious mind. The minds of the cosmos, the minds of the planet, the minds of the infinite have merged into one. So I just wanted to complete that bit, because we did last week look at the fact that, you know, there were already these maps in there, and I wanted to finish that portion up. Let us look further today at the 96 frequencies of transfiguration. Last week we discussed blissful transfiguration, grateful acceptance, complete surrender, identityless awareness, culminating bliss, integrating frequencies, devotional dedication, relinquishing boundaries, self-sustaining oneness, and refined purity. So these are very real frequencies that are part of massive bands in the cosmos. They are part of our DNA, and they are part of the holy city of the infinite mother and father. The more we live them, the more we materialize that city. Because as I've explained over the last 2 weeks, it has become our duty to manifest the city. No longer is it going to be handed to us on a platter. Because as we said 2 weeks ago, there was a pole reversal where we've become more proactive and the mother and father more receptive. We are to grow up into spiritual maturity. So, fully reclaimed innocence. My brothers and sisters, fully reclaimed innocence. We read something out of one of the libraries last week that really struck me when I read it to you. It dealt with the fact that our purity is restored, but it's more mature than before. It's more faceted. It's more diverse. It has depth to it. There's a movie out called Enchanted that little kids love, and so hence I get to see it very often. I am blessed with a little 9-year-old daughter. And so this movie deals with the fact that a cartoon character comes into the real world through a manhole in New York City. And she falls through a wormhole in space, sort of from her cartoon world. And how she becomes more whole, more real. Because the cartoon world is just the almost a caricature of life, in that it's just a few lines. It hasn't been properly filled in. This is exactly the way we have been. This is one of the big reasons the fall has had such value. Because when we were created, we were totally like children. Our depth of emotions was very basic emotions, didn't properly even understand our emotions. We did not value life because that's all we knew. We did not value our infallibility because we'd never made a mistake. We did not value basic things about ourselves because we had never been without them. We were totally innocent. Granted, we are now yet again in what's called the realms of innocence, which is the title of an upcoming book of mine. But the realms of innocence, which in my book deals with the triumphant return of the lost tribes, which are these tribes of innocence, and the return of these forgotten kingdoms and their messages to us. But our innocence is different now. It is mature innocence. It is innocence that's chosen rather than innocence that has no choice. So our innocence is fully reclaimed. And how is it reclaimed? Innocence is found in living in the moment, my brothers and sisters. And we cannot live in the moment if we live in mind. Hence, the next one that follows on it is the flowering of the heart. The flowering of the heart means that we live from the heart. There's deeper meanings behind these things. If I give you a phrase for a frequency, you can go into it over and over and over again. It has multiple meanings. Let me give you an example. The flowering of the heart. We have spoken about this pattern, which I said was the template of the cosmos as well as the template of man's DNA at this point after ascension has taken place. It's like a rose. Circle in the middle, 3 petals, 7 petals, 12, 20, 33, and 54 petals. That's the rose. As we live more and more fully in our heart, that pattern contained in our hearts, each one of those chambers come online. That is when we have the full flowering of the heart. And furthermore, if you will notice, if I had more time with you, I could literally trace for you how each one of these 96 frequencies of transfiguration move from one into the other. They tell a story. Often I have worked on these frequencies, and because I have one out of order or I have used the wrong word on one that I didn't hear properly, I will be awakened in the middle of the night by the Infinite Mother or Father to tell me, Almin, get up. There's a leakage in the cosmos. There's a leakage everywhere else. You did something wrong with those frequencies or those qualities that you had to do. And they will give me exactly which of the 96 is wrong, what's the problem, because they tell a story as they go one into another. We look at refined purity. Refined purity is chosen innocence. We look at fully reclaimed innocence means we have all the innocence back that we used to have. But with it comes the additional component, its opposite pole, which is purity that pulses with innocence. Purity is a mindset. It is a heart set. It is a way of living. So you can see how one flows into the other. Innocence is only found when you live in the heart. You cannot live fully in the heart until there is the flowering of the heart. The more you live in the heart, the more it flowers. Then you go from the flowering of the heart to unwavering trust in the infinite. How does thought happen which disturbs innocence? Because there cannot be innocence where there's thought. You know, I was once about a month or two ago, I was on a panel with a group of very learned professors and doctors and these sorts of people, and we were sitting together there, and they had to speak about the power of now. But when I said that it cannot be found in the presence of thought, there was some great opposition from my fellow panelists who said there can be no such thing as no place of thought. You know, and I didn't bother to argue, but I finally stood up and say, you cannot know that there is a thoughtless life until you live it. You cannot know that there's sky to fly in when you're a caterpillar and not a butterfly. So there is a way of living on completely with emptiness of mind. I'm doing it. My speaking is coming without conscious thought. And it is thoughts arise as resistance to life. It is in the unwavering trust in the infinite that we live in the silence. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Almeen at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today. After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almeen experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book had been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to lead the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master and in addition continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Almeen's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almeen's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back. So we spoke about the fact that the unwavering trust in the infinite is absolutely essential to maintaining the innocence of life, because we have to live in the heart and we live in mind when there is resistance to life, and mind pulls us out of the moment into the next one. Now it flows into the next frequency, which is unencumbered journey. My brothers and sisters, the baggage we bring to the moment can pull us backwards. And the baggage consists of the following type of things. To be weighted down by self-reflection, to be encumbered by self-reflection. Self-reflection is egocentric. It is the egoless life that lives a life from higher identity as a being as vast as the cosmos, having a human experience that is the ideal. When we compare ourselves to others, if you look at a child when they are small, especially very small children, they just express. They don't for a heartbeat ask if that expression is acceptable to the rest of the world, or whether it is stacking up to Billy down the road, or whether they should be this or should be that. That's the baggage that we assume later in life. And so at this point, if instead of weighing ourselves against others, thinking there's somebody better or there's somebody less than, and so we feel good about ourselves, this is the weight of self-reflection. And even it has a more subtle and insidious form as well. And it goes like this. If somebody says, I had a toy car when I was a little boy. I had a red toy car when I was a little boy that I loved very much. I wanted to sleep with that car every night, but it wasn't very comfortable because it was hard. Instead of just being with the experience that this person is relaying, to know that everything that's being said in front of you has some sort of a significance for you, to listen while assimilating through the heart in silence of the mind. If instead our minds jump in and immediately we want to tell him, yes, we had a set of blocks that we liked as well, we wanted to do that as well, instead of constantly having to compare yourself to the mirrors in your environment, just observe them. This is the unencumbered journey. other aspects of encumbering the journey is the two biggies. Boy, I tell you, these ones I find creeping in, even in my language, they creep in. And I don't know where they come from because I have lived an egoless life for a long time, but they must be somehow deeply rooted in the psyche of man. And that is self-pity and self-importance. I would not trade the journey of my life for anything. Yet, you know, there are times that I feel sorry for myself because of how hard I have to work. You know, and the fact that I sometimes, with some mild form of envy, not that I want them not to have it, is that I wish I could have it, look at others when they go on vacation. My life is my own design. If I design it, it is madness to feel sorry for myself because I designed it a certain way. At times, we work very hard because there's momentum needed. And then when we're over that hill, then we get to coast. And we've worked to get to that top of that hill. The self-pity. Toltecs have studied self-pity and self-importance for a very long time. And their teachings about this is handed down from Nagual to Nagual in their oral traditions. It was handed down to me very early in my life that self-importance actually means self-pity at its root. It's a derivative of self-pity. That's another form of encumbering the journey. And then the other things that encumber the journey, my brothers and sisters, are your identities that you assume, your labels. We all play roles. It's when we believe them that we start to get trapped in identities. And the problem with that is that we don't see things clearly, because the majority of life has to be accessed non-cognitively. In other words, it comes from your deep knowingness that isn't through the brain. These feelings, which is non-cognitive knowingness, different from emotions, which has as its root desire, the feelings that we get is not clear and pure when we have personal identity. When we get rid of our personal identity, believing that we are all things, we are no thing per se. We are all things. And if we are there in our life, our feelings are clear as a guidance system. But so many people say, I feel this or I feel that. But in actual fact, they're feeling things that happened to them as a child that have not yielded their insights. And so it's not a response to life. It's actually a reaction against life. So if we look at the next one, and actually we should possibly just pause for a second and say that another encumbrance to life that of course is there, but I've mentioned it so many times on these shows that I believe by now we all know it, but let's just repeat it, and that is the social conditioning of man. The biggest bondage we can possibly have is social conditioning. The next one is the joyous song of the heart. And I want to combine it with the one that comes right after, which is number 16 in this story that's being told by the frequencies of the cosmos, the tones of Mother's voice. It is masterful living. The joyous song of the heart, masterful living. How does the one flow into the other? In 2006, when the purpose of life changed from turning, from solving the illusion of existence, from changing the unknown into the known through experience, the new task that was given us as the reason to be was that we create through the heart. A master does not seek truth. They create truth spontaneously. How can this be? Where does this come about? Well, the fact of the matter is that it is in physical life where the unknown and the truly unknowable meet. So that if we find things led on by the potential that pours forth through no one has known in the cosmos and the known meets. We are able to pull in new truths by delving into the unknowable. We've discussed on previous shows that there aren't many teachers that teach that tippy top of the pyramid. Most teachers teach the known, those that teach to go into the bliss, that, you know, give you teachings where your heart goes, yes, I know that. And you know what? The way they said it is so inspiring. I'm going to incorporate more of it into my life. Very valuable purpose. But when you get to your ascended mastery levels, my brothers and sisters, you're dealing with the unknowable. And that's where you start to create truth spontaneously, moment by moment. And it is done by following the joyous song of the heart. That's when masterful living truly takes place. What is that joyous song of the heart? The joyous song of the heart is wild woman, wild man. Each one of us has both in it. Wild woman and wild man is the instinctual nature of each being. Wild man wants to live a life of adventure, of exploration, wants to conquer pieces of himself that lie like a wildish landscape within. He wants to climb the highest mountain. He wants to exceed his boundaries. Men and women have this archetype within them. This is part of the joyous song of the heart. I will speak to you about the wild woman archetype when we return from these commercial messages.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almeen's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Elvispada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Almeen continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almeen is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almeen, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
I want to quote a bit out of one of my favorite books, Women Who Run with the Wolves. And the part of the book that I actually like the best is simply the introduction. I think it is very beautifully described by someone who has spent some decades, and the author on this is Clarissa Pinkola Estes, E-S-T-E-S. And she speaks about this wild woman archetype. And she says that this is the part of ourselves that we ride hard to catch up with. We clear off the desk, clear off the relationship, clear out one's mind, turn to a new page, insist on a break, break the rules, stop the world, for we are not going on without her any longer. When we find her, once that we have regained her, women and men will fight hard to keep her, for with her, their creative lives blossom. Their relationships gain meaning and depth and health. Their cycles of sexuality, creativity, work, and play are reestablished. They are no longer marks for the predations of others. They are entitled equally under the laws of nature to grow and to thrive. So, my brothers and sisters, this wild woman archetype has always come from the potential that flows in through our life force center. But the life force center was moved up to the heart. And we spoke about this. It was done, I believe, in May of 2007. And we find that it came in through the life force, but it was interpreted by the non-cognitive feelings of the heart. This is the song of the heart that creates the new potential for us so that we can create truth spontaneously, living the masterful living. If you don't have those pieces that are connected, she gives some symptoms of disrupted wildish forces in the psyche. And she describes it as feeling powerless, chronically doubtful, shaky, blocked, unable to follow through, giving one's creative life over to others, life-sapping choices in mates, work or friendships, suffering to live outside one's own cycles, overprotective of self, inert, uncertain, faltering, inability to pace oneself or set limits, and to fear to venture by oneself or to reveal oneself, fear to seek mentor, mother, father, fear to set out on one's imperfect work before it is an opus, fear to set out on a journey, fear of caring for another or others, fear one will run on, run out, run down, cringing before authority, loss of energy before creative projects, wincing, humiliation, angst, numbness, and anxiety, afraid to bite back when there is nothing else left to do, afraid to try the new, fear to stand up, afraid to speak up. So, how does it feel when this is present? And she describes how she grew up in the countryside. And this is the place where she learned so much. And she says that she learned, for example, the tough love when there was injured pups of the fox that she had to abandon because she knew that it was the law of the tough love. And so she speaks also about dancing in the moonlight as a little child and being free. And these are the places where she learned how to create the wild woman archetype. So we are often criticized by others in our environment who view the wildish male as potentially dangerous, who view the wildish female in very, very unflattering terms as well. Somehow, wild is equated with bad, or wild is equated with the fact that we are going to be so out of control that it isn't going to be pleasant to be around us. Women have found that when they bring out this wildish archetype, that people are afraid. She says in her book, the wild woman concept was first crystallized for me in the study of wolves. I studied other creatures as well, such as bear, elephant, and the soul birds, which she calls butterflies. The characteristics of each species give abundant hints into what is knowable about the feminine instinctual psyche. And she says that it began when I was a little child. She said that I wanted to be an ecstatic wanderer. Rather than chairs and tables, I preferred the ground, trees, and caves, for in those places I felt I could lean against the cheek of God. The river always called to be visited after dark. The fields needed to be walked in so they could make their rustle talk. Fires needed to be built in the forest at night, and stories needed to be told outside the hearing of grown-ups. I was lucky to be brought up in nature. There, lightning strikes taught me about sudden death and the evanescence of life. Mice litter showed that death was softened by new life. When I unearthed trilobites from the loam, I understood that humans had been here a long, long time. I learned about the sacred art of self-decoration, with monarch butterflies perched atop my head, lightning bugs as my night jewelry, and emerald green frogs as bracelet. The fuzzy caterpillars which fell from their branches and crawled back up again toward single-mindedness. Their tickle walking on my arm taught how skin can come alive. Climbing to the tops of trees taught what sex would someday feel like. My brothers and sisters, I have done much counseling over the years with my students and have found that when we trace back traits in their families, that it is invariable that either a mother or a grandmother or a great-grandmother ended up in some sanatorium or confined because she went through a nervous breakdown. And the reason is that we, you know, the post-World War II generation grew up in a time when women were infantilized and treated as property. And I'm reading now again from the book, The Women Who Run with the Wolves, Women Who Run with the Wolves, and it says they were kept as fallow gardens. But thankfully, there were always wild seeds which arrived on the wind. Though what they wrote was unauthorized, women blazed away anyway. Thought, what they painted, went unrecognized. Though what they painted went unrecognized, it fed the soul anyway. Women had to beg for the instruments and the spaces needed for their arts, and if none were forthcoming, they made space in trees, caves, woods, and closet. Dancing was barely tolerated, if at all. So they danced in the forest where no one could see them, or in the basement, or on the way out to empty the trash. Self-decoration caused suspicion. Joyful body or dressed increased the danger of being harmed or sexually assaulted. The very clothes on one's shoulders could not be called one's own. It was a time when parents who abused their children were simply called strict, when the spiritual lacerations of profoundly exploited women were referred to as nervous breakdowns, when girls and women who were tightly girdled, tightly reined, and tightly muzzled were called nice, and those other females who managed to slip the collar for a moment or two were branded bad. So, my brothers and sisters, a very beautiful movie is Chocolat, and it tells you of a wild woman who follows the wind, who enters a little stoic little town in which everybody listens to the leader of the town and everybody lives their lives in boxes. And how the influence of her instinctual nature, which she refused to relinquish, changed all the people in the town. It is unfortunately so that women often attack other women who bring out their wild nature. They wonder if they're coming on to their partner, or they wonder whether or not they are thinking that they should be flouting sexuality. My brothers and sisters, once a woman finds that bushy tail of the wolf going from under her skirt, she doesn't tuck it in easily again. She may, for moments, play the role, but she will, under all circumstances, hang on to it. So when people don't have these archetypal parts of themselves fully active and in place, they feel sparse, they feel stagnated, they feel unhappy. And for example, when women reassert their relationship with the wildish nature, they are gifted with a permanent and internal watching system, a knower, an intuitive part of themselves, and a listener who guides, suggests, and urges vibrant life in the inner and outer worlds. When women are with the wild woman, the fact of that relationship glows through them. And remember, this is for men as well. This wild teacher, wild mother, wild mentor supports their inner and outer lives, no matter what. And the reason that she is equating it to wolves is that she says that wolves, like women, have been viewed with suspicion. And their terrain, too, has been diminished and diminished, and they have been banished to lands that are no longer fertile. It's because of this that she sees the similarities in the psyche of wild woman. And so, you know, if you look at the Native American cultures, the beauty of it is that the men are expressing not only the wild man nature, but the wild woman nature. Now, the other problems they have is that they have lived lives of uniformity, which it makes it very, very hard to sustain when it has become obsolete cosmically as a band of compassion across the macrocosm. However, there is so much to learn. Men are afraid to adorn themselves. Oh my goodness, perhaps people would think my sexual preferences are thus or thus because I adorn myself. It's part of the wild woman archetype. That must be inside the male for his male archetype to properly type. Native American men in their regalia adorn themselves fully and unashamedly, and because of that, there's vibrancy. They still think it is fine to sit next to a creek and beat their drum and sing to the moon. These are wild women traits. And because those are active, the wild man traits are more active. There's a little book called Heart of Darkness that is the most read book when entrants come into Stanford University and are asked what was the most influential book in their lives. The number one choice has traditionally been The Heart of Darkness. And I'm sorry, I haven't read it, so I don't know actually who wrote it. But I do know from my son, who's a Stanford graduate, amongst others, that he has written that it was written about a group of white men who traveled up a river in Africa, and how they became more and more savage as they went up the river into Africa. My brothers and sisters, it is where our societies are so controlled that these wildish instinctual sides cannot come out, that when they have the opportunity, that they come out jaggedly and distortedly, and that is what we need to fear. It's not the fear of being familiar with them and living them. Hitler sent some of his people over when Japan invaded Malaysia, and they reported back to Hitler that it was some of the most savage, this coming from Hitler's people, was some of the most savage invasion that they have ever witnessed. They were surprised. It's where people live highly civilized lives, that when it is called upon to bring the warrior-like type archetypes out in terms of the instinctual male, that it comes out as savagery. Countries where this is normally and healthily live are more inclined to bring it out in the way that it is meant to live out new potential and search beyond the furthest horizons. Let us take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
The Gift of the Unicorns is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers the question, do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today. A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
So if we continue, we've just got our last segment left, if we continue down these most sacred frequencies in the cosmos, I want to go and skip, actually, to the last few of them, because you see, this story builds. From joyous song of the heart comes masterful living. From masterful living comes the birth of hope, and so forth. But it builds and builds and builds until eventually we come to the culmination, which would be the 96th frequency. So I'd like to take a look at the last few frequencies. Let's start with number 88. Number 88 is courage born of vision. Where does courage come from, my brothers and sisters? It's well worth looking at, because it is the courage that turns life from a journey of trepidation to a journey of adventure. And one of those frequencies that was put in recently, within the last 4 days in the cosmos, was that all life is deemed as safe, but that we realize it is an adventure. It is not endurance. It is an adventure. And so the courage comes from this recognition that life is filled with adventure. And you can see how that cannot be unless the archetypal man, who is the adventurer and the discoverer, and joyously searches out his world, lie on your belly next to a little stream. Look at the rocks in the bottom of that stream. You know that they tell a complete story. I had an archaeologist that was in my classes for many years, and he taught me so much. I would gather rocks and ask him, what is this one saying? What is that one saying? And he would show me how the multiple colors in the bottom of a stream of rocks, all different kinds of pebbles, show the different types of cataclysms that shaped that ravine that made that stream. It tells a story. It is the exploration of our world that gives us that viewpoint that we are on a great adventure. It takes awareness. If we mindlessly stumble back and forth to work, only last night, I took my little daughter to the fair. We loved to look at all the bunnies, and there was a whole reptile room that we wanted to look at and all of that. So we were at the fair, and every year at the fair, I meet a friend of mine who is in the sheriff's posse, and I asked him, what's new? I hadn't seen him for a year. And all he could say is, nothing's new. I go to work each day. I come home. I take care of my family, and we sit on the porch, and I provide for my family, and then I go back to work again the next day. He couldn't tell me one major new event in his life that had taken place during the last year that we hadn't seen each other. my brothers and sisters, this is the stifling of the archetypal male. And if those vibrant instinctual pieces are not whole and healthy, we don't have the vision of ourselves as vibrant beings that are able to travel around in our psyche and in the reflection of it, which is our world, and explore. That's part of the vision we need for the courage to live life fluidly and not statically. And incidentally, the next one, which is 89, is masterful fluidity. The fluidity of a master is his hallmark. That is what differentiates, in many instances, mastery from those who are not, is they are able to spin on a dime. They want this very much. They don't get it. Not a preference, just a preference, doesn't matter, not a need. My being is my sustenance. And so they might seem to be mercurial in their desires. They are, because desire is like the flow in the river. There's a rock in front of you, no matter, I go the other way. So this fluidity comes from flowing in the moment, and it only happens when there's courage born of vision. The other area of vision has to do with the fact that we have belief in ourselves, that we trust that we will at all times manifest our next step of clarity, that our timing is perfect, and that even if it looks like a flaw, it is never a flaw. It is aiding us in our growth. And then the faith that we have in the large picture, in the template, and the belief that we can align ourselves with that template and live a life of growth through grace. So number 90 is glorious physical manifestation. The glorious physical manifestation comes from the hope, from the belief in self, from the trust that we are the creators of our life, co-creating reality with the infinite. Great white magic has been given to man. It is yet growing up, but it is incorruptible in its full expression. That is number 91. The magic can come back to life. And number 92, Mother woke me up for in the middle of the night because I had written the words wrong. And I had gentle release of the obsolete. But Mother had me change that to gentle awakening from the dream. When I was taking these frequencies down in dictation, I see images and I could see old patterns gently releasing. But instead of saying gentle release of the obsolete, I should have said gentle awakening from the dream. My brothers and sisters, there is always a dream, because there's a matrix needed that provides the stage play upon which life can take place. If we didn't do that, there could not be individuated creations within the infinite's being. However, there is always a more lucid dream. And so as we awaken from one dream to a more lucid and more lucid into eternity, that's what number 92 is about. And we discussed in 2 weeks ago on our show this issue of the purpose of chaos and how we are forever trying to match the template, the ideal of existence through our personal manifestation. That dream is the template, and it simply makes way for a higher template, but a template is needed for creation to take place. Then we come to new facets of contributing diversity. You see, it's not just that we are asked to conform. That's not what we mean when we say that we need to match the template. Because each one of us brings richness and wealth and new facets of contributing diversity to the pattern. In other words, it goes from a cartoon and fleshes itself out into real life, and we create more and more beauty and detail in that real life as we learn and create truth in our own daily lives. Then we have, as 94, long-awaited cosmic birth. Cosmic birth is out of the subconscious mind. We discussed this last week. It is out of the dream of Mother's subconscious mind, of the infinite Mother, Father, God's subconscious mind. It is, in fact, that which has now combined all three of the minds. And it is a place where we no longer keep perpetuating the past. Our birth is into a place where we can create spontaneously through the heart. And then 95 is very beautiful. Prepared cradle of love. When those first three holy cities that we discussed 2 weeks ago opened, which was the holy city of the Mother and Father above Oregon in America, then above Johannesburg in South Africa, and then above Dublin in Ireland. My brothers and sisters, it created a cradle of love. And it started something that is going to continue. And what it goes to is the culmination, which is number 96, the dawn of a glorious new reality. Let us live heaven on earth as though it is already here. And in doing so, we bring it about. Thank you for your presence here with me this week. My love to you.
The world of mysticism has yet another reason to rejoice. Al Mean has authored another manuscript of profound knowledge. It's entitled Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of the Mysteries of Isis. Through a time travel tunnel linking Ireland and Egypt, Isis has sent a small group of masters to prepare for the day when the mysteries would once again be released to the world to restore balance and enhance life. They established the Order of the White Rose to guard the sacred objects and the secrets of Isis. In an unprecedented event heralding the advent of a time of light, these mysteries are released for the very first time. Packed with truly thought-provoking information, this book is bound to have an indelible impression on not only the reader, but on global New Age philosophy. To reserve your copy of this groundbreaking work, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, Windows into Eternity with Al Mean. Please join us again next week.